B-Pod Studios.
Relatable, reliable, and even relentless at times. This is Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, Gaspar Murray on this Saturday morning. Tim McCone in for Murray, talking Patriots, talking Antonio Brown, and just want to get to Jimmy G as well, because clearly still a big part of the story when it comes to the Patriots over the last few years is Jimmy Garoppolo, and obviously Bill Belichick invested when it comes to him. Positive things for Jimmy G. I will say this, Chris, I'm not sure if you caught this earlier in the week, but all the talk about Kittle coming in and the tight ends and Bill Belichick going through the greatest tight ends in the history of football, and there was a name that was kind of left off that list in terms of Rob Gronkowski, wasn't brought up by him. Doesn't necessarily have the same things when it comes to Jimmy G and the praise that he has for Garoppolo, but just your thoughts on Jimmy G and the player that he's become for the Niners. Do you think do you think there's some regret still for Belichick when it comes to having to make that move and get rid of him and sending him to San Francisco?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, Jimmy G for him is the one who got away. I think we all sort of have that in our lives, you know, whether it's a job or it's a person or it's something you wanted. He's always going to wonder, what would it have been like if I could move on from Tom the way I wanted to and go with Jimmy G? And I'll say this too, in a lot of the discussions we have about the Brady Belichick breakup and the Brady Belichick Cold War that sort of, precipitated that breakup, I think one of the things that kind of gets lost is that idea that Bill was ready to move on. And I think he made that clear to Tom in more ways than one, you know, suddenly being upset with the Alex Guerrero thing in 17. Like, it's not a coincidence that 2017 was really the year where Bill started to sort of drop the hammer, because I think in his mind, he was like, well, this is Tom's last year. I'm transitioning to Jimmy. Like, I don't have to put up with some of this stuff anymore.
Yeah.
And if I can also make it in a certain way, a way where this guy wants out, then I can ensure I can move on to my preferred guy, which is Garoppolo. And I don't know if you remember this, Tim. Do you remember after Super Bowl 51, Adam Schefter going on radio in this market and saying that if that game against the Falcons had continued to go the way that it was going, that Jimmy Garoppolo would have been the starting quarterback for the Patriots in 2017?
That's right.
He said that.
Yes.
He said, and this is the same guy who said they wouldn't trade him for four first-round picks, Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah.
So I just want to, you know, provide a little background there in terms of the whole, because people say, oh, you know, people look at it this way and they say, oh, the Patriots or the Kraft got Jimmy G out of town, and then Brady turned his back on the Patriots and Kraft by saying he wanted out. It's like, well, actually, there was already this sort of surreptitious campaign behind the scenes by Belichick to try and force the guy out.
I think that's a great point, and I think that's something that people really don't kind of – they have trouble wrapping their head around, because like you said, obviously Brady ultimately decides to leave, but I think that was more Belichick's decision than even Brady's in terms of some of the things that went on. We talked about it earlier. You know, not even consulting him when it comes to letting a guy like Demaryius Thomas go,
so they can
leading
keep
into
Gunner.
That season. Exactly, so you can keep Gunner. Ultimately, if a guy wants to get a massage after the game from his guy, I think he should be allowed to get a massage after the game if he's won you six Super Bowls. So, like, you know, some of those behind the scenes fights. And I just think it got to a point where, you know, ultimately Brady said, if I'm not being respected, then I have to walk out the door. And so, yeah, I think it was a lot of Belichick kind of forcing Brady almost out rather than Brady deciding to up and leave.
And that had to do with sort of like, you know, Jimmy G. Like, you know, we love to talk celebrity stuff on here. And I wish Murray were here to give his Jennifer Aniston thing. But it's kind of like, you know, Belichick's Brad, you know, it's a situation sort of where like Belichick's Brad Pitt, Brady's Jennifer Aniston, all-time great legend, and, you know, Jimmy G is, what's her face?
Oh, Angelina Jolie.
Coming in and just like blowing the whole thing up. Like, that's kind of really like what it was. And I think a lot of the Brady-Belichick breakdown, even after Jimmy G was gone, was this sort of like tacit resentment from Belichick that Brady did not allow him to do what he wanted to do, which was to move on and go with Jimmy G. And I think he sort of took it out on Tom, which leads me to this overall point. Why is Bill Belichick so invested in Jimmy Garoppolo? It's because from a pure football standpoint and a legacy credit standpoint, he gets a lot more credit for Garoppolo, this guy he identified from an FCS school, took in the second round, yeah, than Brady, who was a lightning strike lottery ticket that he really can't take credit for. And if you don't believe me, ask Scott Pioli, who said in David Halberstam's Education of a Coach, go look at the book, read the words. If anybody in this building says they knew this is what Tom Brady was going to be, they're lying. They are a liar. Those aren't my words. Those are Scott Pioli's words.
Yeah.
You know, who's basically the general manager and the team building partner with Belichick at that time. So I think that's why Bill's so invested in Garoppolo. That's why he keeps throwing him verbal bouquets, because it reflects well on him. Garoppolo's success reflects well on Bill. It says he can identify these quarterbacks. It says he can find a franchise quarterback, whereas Brady just fell in his lap.
No, that's a great point. Here's my question, though, when it comes to Belichick and Garoppolo. Did Belichick get it right with Garoppolo?
In terms of,
is he actually good?
Yeah, I mean, yes. Yes, Garoppolo is good. Is he a franchise quarterback? No, but could Bill win with Garoppolo? Do I think Bill could win one Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo? I do, because
really?
Bill's a really good coach.
Yeah.
And I think Garoppolo, well, here's the thing. This is what I've said to people, and I think this goes both ways. And I know I can be tough on Garoppolo, and some of it's in jest, but, you know, I don't think the guy stinks. Like, I think he can play. And if I had a choice between Cam Newton or Jimmy Garoppolo on this Patriots team, I would take Garoppolo. But here's the thing. There's people like Maz who oversell Garoppolo. So I'm going to put it in terms I think we can all understand. If you said Bill Belichick can have Jared Goff, would you say good, bad, I'm excited, I'm not excited?
I think he could actually win with a guy like Goff.
I agree.
Yeah.
And that's what Garoppolo is. To me, Garoppolo, Goff, same guy. I mean, I've used this analogy before. It's like Orange Crush and Sunkist. It's like the same thing. You know, I mean, yeah, the packaging is a little different, but it's the same thing. They both have gone to one Super Bowl. Both of them didn't really play well. There's a lot of doubt about whether they'll get back. And even this year, McCone, you look at it, Jared Goff, quarterback rating, 101.4. Jimmy Garoppolo, quarterback rating, 101.2. They are very similar guys. They need a lot of care. They need a lot of coaching. They might get in situations where they're under pressure, where they don't perform well, but there's ultimately enough talent there for you to get to a Super Bowl. And if you're a really good coach, you might even be able to win it with them.
And I think it's, again, just putting players in a position to be successful, right? So they're going to play to Garoppolo's strengths, get the ball out fast. And I think I heard you on with Felger and Maz yesterday, and you brought up a good point where Felger's general idea of, you know, Belichick can kind of win with any quarterback is right. It just goes too far with it. With Brian Hoyer's not good.
No, I mean,
Jared Stidham's not good.
Yeah, I mean,
there's an extreme there. You know what I mean?
There's a baseline of talent,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I think Garoppolo fits in that mold of a guy that you could win with when it comes to the Patriots.
Totally.
617-779-0985. So you guys lined up. Let's get to some of the calls now. Let's talk to Mike in Hudson. Mike, what's up?
Guys, great show. And Chris, excellent point about Belichick and his affection for Garoppolo regarding drafting him early in the second round versus Brady in the sixth. So, excellent point. I would like to talk about keys to victory tomorrow as quick as I can, because I do think slipping to four losses could be, I don't know about catastrophic, but really bad for the Patriots. Last week, Shanahan protected Garoppolo by running Mostert, who's outstanding. He happens to be out tomorrow, I believe. And by running a lot of jet sweep stuff to Samuel and company, and really just throwing a lot of screens. There weren't a lot of passes that went more than 15 yards. He protected him because the week before, Jimmy was a little bit injured, but also for the first time that I've ever seen Jimmy, he seemed to be a little bit lacking confidence. And so Shanahan did an amazing job with Jimmy last week. On the other side of the ball, on the other side of the ball, as far as the Patriots offensively, I really think we need to see Cam Newton, a la how he was against Seattle in the second half, pushing the ball vertically up the field and doing a great job. And I think he has a chance because, obviously, Richard Sherman's out, but I think the safety is out too.
Both safeties are out.
Yeah, so I think there's an opportunity in the passing game. And then really the last quick point I want to make is Denver last week did an amazing job taking away the what I call the quarterback power read, where Newton reads the defensive end and either gives it and they're running the perimeter, or Newton runs it off tackle with the backside pulling guard. Denver was on to both aspects of that play, shut it down completely, and I think maybe the Patriots need to stay with that kind of concept, but maybe change formation a little bit because it's getting predictable. Just some of your thoughts. Thanks.
No, you broke it down, you know, really well. It'll be interesting to see if the Patriots. I think San Francisco will sort of follow some of the Denver blueprint in terms of daring the Patriots to try and beat them with the pass, even with those safeties out, Jimmy Ward and Jaquiski Tartt. The one thing that's interesting is I think that even with Sherman out, the 49ers have gotten surprisingly good cornerback play. Jason Verrett,
yeah,
who was a good guy,
suddenly
out of TCU,
healthy. Yeah, suddenly exactly, healthy. Yeah.
And Emmanuel Mosley, he's not like a big-time guy, but someone I really trust, Darius Butler, former Patriots, Colts cornerback. He does this thing, you know, everything DB that he puts out there. And he has broken down a number of times how fundamentally and technically sound Mosley is. So I think it'll be interesting to see if the Patriots can take advantage because the safeties are out, but they've gotten pretty good corner play. But you look at that 49ers defense, McCone, they're pretty banged up. I mean, there's no, obviously, Nick Bosa.
Bosa's gone.
There's no D Ford.
Yep.
Quan Alexander's going to be out. They don't have the starting safeties. Who else? Am I missing someone?
I think that's pretty much it. But to your point, so the whole defensive line is pretty much, the week one defensive line is pretty much gone.
Yeah.
The safeties are not there. Sherman. So, again, I just don't know how explosive and how much there is in terms of the Patriots offense where they're going to be able to take advantage of it. Maybe in the run game they'll be able to. I don't know what you thought about Damien Harris. I thought they should have probably stuck with him a little more, especially last week, because I thought he did pop a little bit more. Again, it's all relative when you're talking about guys like Sony Michel and things like that. But I thought he looked impressive in that first game against the Chiefs. So maybe you get him the ball a little more and, you know, try to work in the backs, because I think that's probably, in terms of skill position guys, the strength of this offense.
Yeah, and to go back to just, you know, talking about Newton a little bit, and because we're talking about can they pass, and I think that's the question. I think teams are going to approach the Patriots and say, every week, and say, you have to prove to us you can beat us with the pass. We know you can beat us with the run. You have an excellent offensive line. Your quarterback is dynamic running the football, and you have a good staple of backs. Damien Harris, James White, Burkhead, all those guys. But just to go back to that Las Vegas game and the passing attack, even in that game, the most targeted person and the leading receiver was Burkhead.
Yeah.
It was all the backs out of the backfield. Like, the passing game is just limited. And the tight end position, if there's any way that Devin Asiasi can be integrated into this, I don't know if he's not ready or it's been a challenging season, I think, for a lot of rookies. But that would really help. I mean, they've gotten, I think it's 6 catches for 82 yards all season from tight ends. That's all Izzo. And, like, that fumble last week was not an accident. That's why he's Ryan Izzo.
Yeah.
If they could get more from that, because at the same time, to tie this all together, Rob Gronkowski the last 2 weeks is 8 catches for 130 yards and a touchdown.
He's starting to look like Gronk again. And to your point, when they had Belichick mic'd up, I don't know if you caught any of that stuff, but when Izzo comes back to the sideline, and that's what we practice, Ryan. That's why we practice it. And it had to have been a terrible feeling for Izzo coming back there, because Belichick certainly wasn't happy with this tight end. Also, it's Ryan Izzo, so I don't think you can be that upset. At your point, the skill position, especially at tight end right now, you're not getting a lot out of it, and I don't know what expectations are for Izzo, but they shouldn't be that high. 617-779-0985 is a telephone number. Going to step aside. We'll talk more Pats coming up after this.
I got plenty more Jimmy G.
All right, yeah, we'll get back into the Jimmy G stuff as well on the other side and see you guys lined up. As well, it's Gasper and Murray. Tim McCone in for Murray.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Relatable, reliable, and even relentless at times. This is Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, Gasper and Murray on this Saturday morning. Tim McCone in for Murray, talking Patriots, talking Antonio Brown, and just want to get to Jimmy G as well, because clearly still a big part of the story when it comes to the Patriots over the last few years is Jimmy Garoppolo, and obviously Bill Belichick invested when it comes to him. Positive things for Jimmy G. I will say this, Chris, I'm not sure if you caught this earlier in the week, but all the talk about Kittle coming in and the tight ends and Bill Belichick going through the greatest tight ends in the history of football, and there was a name that was kind of left off that list in terms of Rob Gronkowski, wasn't brought up by him. Oh, doesn't necessarily have the same things when it comes to Jimmy G and the praise that he has for Garoppolo.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, there's a number of things. Coach, being my first coach in the NFL, he was just very honest. Really never beat around the bush. He was very black and white with everything they did, and that's kind of how I am, and I really appreciate that. Whether it was my first day there or when I got traded, he always, you know, shot me straight, and I think just when you're talking about just man-to-man, that's all you could really ask for at the end of the day.
All right, back here, 98.5, the Sports Hub. It is Gasper and Murray. Tim McCone in for Murray. I want to get back to the Jimmy G stuff, but also want to get to your call since I see you guys lined up, and let's do that. Now let's go to Brendan, who's been hanging on for a long time. What's up, Brendan?
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on. So I'm actually a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan, so I've been pretty close to the situation for a long time. Long-suffering Bucs fan, I should say. And I think two events really led to this Antonio Brown signing, and I do tend to lean towards Chris's take on this, where I think this is going to be a boom or bust move for the Bucs, where I think it's going to make or break our the Super Bowl this season, either going to break the locker room or get us to where we need to be. But the two reasons why I think we actually move forward with this Antonio Brown move, one being O.J. Howard's injury. And it looked like Howard was having a breakout campaign to start the season. And don't get me wrong, the injury was early in the year, but it looked like his and Brady's chemistry was definitely there. And obviously, that's a good amount of touches that is being taken off the board. And I don't think Brady can step into a tight end two role at this point. It doesn't appear that chemistry is there with Brady. So I think there are still some targets to go around in the grand scheme of things. But my second point, and honestly, more importantly, is if you look at our cap situation for next season, we are really in a tight spot, and we have a lot of key players that we might need to re-sign. I mean, I'm looking at Sue. I'm looking at Lavonte David, longtime Buccaneer, probably best linebacker in football right now. Oh, absolutely. And I think a lot of this is we're not going to be able to afford the $16 to $20 million a year that Chris Godwin's going to demand on the free agent market. So how much of this is preparation for that where, you know, we already have a guy ready to fill in the shoes for Chris Godwin if he leaves in free agency?
That's a great point. And obviously, you know, he's a lot closer to the Bucs than I am. I guess my understanding, I haven't seen the contract yet. Did Brown sign a multi-year deal?
No, it's a one-year deal.
Yeah,
minimum with some incentives. So, I mean, he's up after this season.
I mean, I think he'll do this once as like a make good, but,
right,
you know,
if he has a successful year,
yeah, he's going to want to get
a
paid
contract.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to want it. I would think he'd want at least like $10 million. I don't know. I mean, if you're talking about salary cap stuff, you're going to need younger, cheaper players to keep some of your veteran core. That would be, to me, I need to develop Tyler Johnson.
Yeah.
And I need to make sure he's ready to go. I need to develop Scotty Miller. But I think they're all in, and, you know, we'll see how it goes. Look, being a Brady guy, I hope it works out. I look at Antonio Brown, and as talented as he is, I just don't think the risk ultimately is worth the reward. And can I tell you, do you know who the number one defense in the NFL is right now by yards per game?
Who is it? The Bucs?
It's the Bucs. And I actually think there's a path for them to win that's not throwing the ball all over the field. It's riding Ronald Jones. It's riding that defense. And I don't know if you need to bring Antonio Brown in, who's a volatile guy, who's going to want his touches and disturb kind of the ecosystem of your team to win, especially at a point when maybe you might be moving away from the original plan of, you know, chuck and duck anyway, because it turns out your running back's pretty good and your defense is pretty good. And if you can just not mess up, you can win some games.
I will say this, trying to maximize the window of the greatest quarterback of all time. It's a novel concept. I know they certainly didn't like doing it in New England, but I give Tampa Bay credit. 617-779-0985. Nick in Gloucester. What's up, Nick?
Hey, how's it going? I actually, I think the Pats should really try focusing on the ground and pound game to establish everything else. Where they got a weak defensive line right now, and the safeties are kind of brand new. I think if you start running that ball, it opens up the play action. It opens up Cam Newton's ability to be able to run. And, I mean, we have a ton of running backs, so we might as well utilize them and open up different things so there's, you know, more of a selection than just one way of winning the football game. Cam Newton shouldn't be the only guy running the ball. And they need to throw the ball, but they can't do that if they don't establish the run and establish some play action.
Yeah, well, here's the problem with that, and it's sort of a, you know, chicken or the egg type of deal. They tried to establish the run against Denver, and I was at that game. It's the first time I've been back in Gillette Stadium, so you can sort of see that all-22 view live, which is not the same as going back and watching the film, but you can see it live. The Broncos had no respect for the Patriots passing game. I mean, Justin Simmons was basically, and a lot of plays, not every play, but a lot of plays was basically playing linebacker. Their excellent safety who went to BC. He'd come running up, dashing up, you know, right before the snap. He was in the box to mess things up. And, you know, as good as their offensive line is, it's hard to run when there's 9-10 guys in the box.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard for any team to do that. And that's what teams are going to do to the Patriots. They're going to take this Broncos blueprint and they're going to say, we dare you to be able to beat us with the pass. So it sounds good. And I agree with what he said in terms of, hey, yeah, set up the run and use that to set up the pass. But when teams aren't going to let you do that, when they feel like the only way you can beat us is the run, we're going to take that away. What are you going to do? You're just going to keep like running into a brick wall?
Yeah, no, I think that's interesting too, right? And obviously, I think you would know a little bit more, especially since you saw it. But what did you see from Edelman? And I know there's been a lot of talk about, oh, he's 34. Is he just washed? Or is he hurt? Because you go back to that Seattle game.
It was awesome.
Looked unbelievable in that
so
game.
Good.
So to say that, oh, he, you know, what do you expect from him? I don't think you can throw to him 15 times and expect him to be healthy like we saw last year. But to think that he fell off a cliff already, I think is a little extreme. Is he just hurt, you think? Or what's going on?
I think
on
they're managing him, trying to get him through the season. I think he's on a pitch count. I think there are times that he gets rubbed out because teams know he's sort of the primary option and they're going to make Cam go somewhere else. I don't know. You know, I'll be honest. I don't know 100%. I'm just sort of throwing darts there when I say those things. I mean, I do think the knee's a real factor and that he's managing that. That I do know. But the rest of it, and I think maybe it's the way teams are covering him. And then there's also the possibility of, you know, and this is speculation, just sort of the old, like, Belichick phase out, you know?
Yeah.
It's happened to other players before where it's like, hey, I'm sort of getting the sense that you're getting older. You're not part of our long-term plan. Maybe you don't necessarily, you know, want to be here as much as you used to. Maybe you have a wandering eye for what's happening in Tampa. Maybe you were too much of a Team Tom guy. And I'm just, in some ways, it's ironic because it reminds me a little bit of what happened to Welker or what they tried to do to Welker in like 2012. And do you remember the guy they tried to replace him with? It was Edelman.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening that year is they were playing, there's the game they lost to the Cardinals at Gillette. And they threw like a, you know, they weren't really using Welker that much that year in the beginning of the year. And they threw like a wide receiver screen, I think, to Edelman. And he ran up the leg of Aaron Hernandez. And Hernandez got hurt and couldn't play. And like at halftime, Brady like lost it and was like, too much change. Like basically was like, put West back in this offense. And they did, but they were trying to phase Welker out. And ultimately they did. And I wonder if it's the same thing with Edelman.
You know what? I completely forgot about that, but you're 100% right. I remember those first few weeks, Welker was just not getting targets. And then all of a sudden he winds up, I think, well, I had close to 100 catches that year. But
season.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They definitely did try to phase him out. That's interesting. I didn't thought about it like that. But especially this year, too, when you really don't have other options, I don't know who you're phasing him out for.
Gunner, because of, maybe?
Yeah,
if Gunner's healthy?
So. Possible. It's possible. 617-779-0985. I will say this about Cam, because I'm with you. I really don't think you can put a ton of this on Cam, but sometimes those mechanics, when like he's thrown, it's it can get ugly. It can get ugly with him. And that Demir Byrd play last week, when Byrd looked like he was wide open there for a potential touchdown and Cam just underthrew him, was kind of an example of that as well.
No, you're right. I mean, there were some guys that were open. I can't deny that. I just think, again, what's interesting to me is that the discussion point after that game was practice and not any focus on the fact that the quarterback hadn't played in a game, which is different for quarterbacks in 3 weeks. Like, even, you know, I'm sure practice is important for quarterbacks. I know it is, you know, in terms of the timing. But in practice, do you think that he has guys pass rushing him full speed that who can hit him? No.
Right.
I mean, you're not going to get your quarterback hurt in practice. So I think, you know, playing at game speed, particularly for a quarterback, is different. And I think him missing the 3 weeks, that really showed to me. He seemed a little skittish in the pocket, and you're right, the mechanics broke down.
617-779-0985, the telephone number. Want to get back to the Jimmy G stuff. Also want to get to some baseball as well. This guy Mookie Betts playing pretty well right now for the Dodgers. So we'll get to that on the other side on this Saturday. It is Gasper and Murray. Tim McCone in for Murray.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, back here, Gasper Murray, 617-779-0985. Tim McCone in for Murray, talking Patriots, talking Antonio Brown, and obviously the Niners and Jimmy Garoppolo. The crush, the one that got away for Bill Belichick back in New England. I'm with you in terms of Garoppolo and what he brings to the table, because I actually thought there was potential that he was a stud, especially, and that's going off, what, six quarters when he was with New England. I don't necessarily think he's lived up to that contract that he got in San Francisco, but I think he's a competent starting quarterback in the NFL. And I think if you give him to a coach like a Shanahan or a Bill Belichick, you can win a lot of games with him as your starting quarterback.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, his winning percentage is out of this world. You know, I think you can question, and I think that we can quibble over how much he has to do with some of that winning, particularly in San Francisco last year, where they won 13 games, and when you look at the postseason, you know, that the playoff game he had against, you know, Green Bay, where he's barely throwing the football, and obviously the Super Bowl. And that's where I wanted to go with this is the Super Bowl, McCone. I think people, you know, particularly Felger and Maz, have forgotten what happened in that Super Bowl. He had a fourth quarter quarterback rating of 2.8 in the Super Bowl against the Chiefs. That is the lowest in Super Bowl history. His team had never trailed in the postseason until that Super Bowl. So he was playing from ahead a lot and able to, like, hand off and really not having to do all that much. And again, you know, that ball game, you know, you're looking at it and there are certain circumstances throughout that game. At one point in that game, you know, the first half, he gets the ball in his own 20, 59 seconds left. They have all three timeouts. His coach doesn't want to let him throw the football. They ran it two straight times. And then Kansas City called a timeout, and then they threw like a halfback angle route. Here's another thing from the Super Bowl. Jimmy G in that Super Bowl, under pressure, under pressure, 1 for 9, 20 yards, 2 interceptions, 2 passes batted down, and a sack. When he had no pressure, he was awesome. When there was no pass rush, in 19 to 22, 199 yards and a touchdown. So that's sort of the difference between a franchise quarterback who elevates everybody around them and elevates their game in the greatest moments and a caretaker quarterback who you have to manage.
Yeah.
You know, he's not he you have to manage him so he can manage the game. And I think that's Garoppolo. I think the idea that Garoppolo is Aaron Rodgers light or like Russell Wilson or this franchise quarterback, I don't buy that. I think he's a lot closer to a Jared Goff or a Kirk Cousins, but in the right situation, you can win with that guy.
No, I'm with you. Phil Perry had an article about Garoppolo this week, too, and he had the stat that blew me away. He said, of the 38 quarterbacks with 60 dropbacks this year, Garoppolo, the only one who's yet to complete a pass that's traveled 20 yards down the field.
Wow.
Even Brian Hoyer had one in just the three quarters he played in Kansas City. So to your point, too, I think that, again, it's kind of the coaching staff putting him in situations to be successful.
Yeah.
And I'll always come back to, and I'll never understand it, especially when you look at the quarterback situation now. What was the rush from Belichick in terms of moving off of Brady? Because, again, we talked about it earlier. I do think a lot of Brady walking out the door in New England had more to do with Belichick than necessarily Brady wanting to walk out the door. So why was he so bullish on wanting the greatest quarterback of all time gone? When you look at a Garoppolo that, you know, again, is competent, but I don't think is necessarily the guy. And then the situation coming into this year where Stidham clearly wasn't the guy. Hoyer, and then Cam Newton happened so late where I don't necessarily think that was the plan either.
They had no plan, Tim.
Yeah.
There was no plan. And I know everybody, you know, because it's Belichick, like, wants to say there was this master plan. There was no plan. And they've done this at other positions. It's just more jarring when they do it at quarterback. They were just going to throw a bunch of stuff against the wall and see what stuck. And what stuck was Cam Newton.
Yeah.
I mean, that was it. In terms of moving on from Brady, I think that there's the legacy element for Bill, you know, being sort of having the Joe Montana, Steve Young transition. But I think more it's just his core football philosophies, which are you want to be a year early rather than a year late on guys. And there are guys who are closer to the beginning of their career and closer to the end. And what kept being thrown around internally in that building by both sides, the Patriots and Brady, was that this term, remember this term from last year, uncharted territory. Yeah. And I think that's scary for a coach like Belichick. I think Bill felt like at any moment Brady could completely fall off the table. And I also think Bill felt like there was some slippage. There was some decline in Brady. A little tough to say that in 17, you know, when he ends up winning the league MVP. But I think he felt like maybe there was some decline there and he wanted to be out ahead of it. So for all those reasons, you know, the fact that, you know, Jimmy G was a guy that could really burnish his legacy, that he'd rather be a year early than a year late, and that it made him uncomfortable from a football standpoint to be relying on a player he felt like could fall off the table at any moment and was doing something that really in the history of the game had never been done. I think those were all the reasons.
It is interesting, though, too, because you're talking about a coach that always stresses, I do what's best for the football team moving forward. And I just look at this year, and especially even go back to last week in that game against the Broncos. Tom Brady's your quarterback. I'm convinced that you still win that game.
Oh, totally. I agree with you on that.
So
yeah. And that's the flip side of it. And I know you want to get back to the calls, but the part of the Brady Belichick relationship that I don't think, Tim, we've spoken enough about. We've spoken a lot about the idea of Brady doesn't have Belichick coming up with these masterful game plans and making sure his team doesn't lose the game and Tampa shoots themselves in the foot and they're undisciplined and they stay stupid, they play stupid football, which wouldn't happen under Bill. That's all true. Brady doesn't have that now, and I think he's seeing it's a different world. But what Bill doesn't have is this brilliant quarterback who can cover up for all of his personnel mistakes, particularly on offense. And that's, I think, a little bit of what you're seeing this year. I mean, I always used to say Brady was like human spackle. You know, he could cover up these holes that Bill had left in the roster construction. And Bill can do it, too, with his brilliant coaching.
Yeah.
But the two of them combined, it was like, all right, it doesn't matter how many roster mistakes you make because you have the greatest coach and the greatest quarterback, and they just cover it up. Well, now just having the greatest coach, you can't cover it all up.
Yeah, yeah. 617-779-0985. Chris, did you cover the team back in 09?
I did.
So how bad did it get in terms of that locker room with Adelius Thomas and all that stuff? When I look at kind of the one outlier season and when Bill kind of lost the locker room,
yeah.
And I use that term loosely, obviously they made the playoffs. But,
yep.
I mean, was that a situation where it did get ugly with New England? And do you think that maybe there's a possibility that something like that could happen this year if it starts to go off the rails this year?
I don't think it could go that way this year. Maybe I'm naive. You know, 09, the issue in 09 is there were a lot of veteran guys who had played other places. And basically, this is the analogy I used. You know, they were taking the Kool-Aid that Bill was pouring. And when nobody was looking, they were dumping it out instead of drinking it. And that's what it was. You had guys there like Adelius Thomas and Sean Springs, you know, who knew that this is not the only way to win games in the NFL, is this Bill, you know, Bill's way. And then there were some decisions that were made, not just fourth and two, but personnel decisions about guys playing that didn't necessarily, you know, fit well with the locker room. People did not feel that year that he was doing what was in the best interest of the team or giving them the best chance to win. They felt like he wanted to play guys that just were going to do it the way he wanted it done, even if that guy wasn't really the best player,
yeah.
You know, like a Terrence Wheatley playing over like a Springs, stuff like that. So that was the issue. And then the other thing is I always say this, winning's the ultimate deodorant. You know, they started to lose some games they shouldn't have lost. You know, they lost, obviously, the Indy game. They lost to Carolina.
Yeah.
I think they lost to Chad Henne and the Dolphins that year.
That sounds right.
Where
yeah.
Chad Henne threw the ball like 50-something times. So they lost these games that they would normally lose, and I think that made guys question it even more. That was a bad year. They just didn't have the chemistry, and I think the prevailing sort of image from that year is the Bill Belichick of Football Life, where they're in New Orleans getting
yeah.
their butt
blown
kicked,
out in
blowing
that game.
Coverages,
yeah.
like, you know, Devery Henderson, and who was the other guy there just running free. And Brady and Belichick are on the sideline, and Belichick turns to Brady and says, I just can't get this team to play the way we need to play. It's so frustrating. And I think that was it. That team was a team that just didn't drink the Kool-Aid, man.
617-779-0985 is the telephone number. Nick, Steve, Mike, I see you guys lined up. Two open lines as well. We'll get to Eurocarlos coming up. Plus, I do want to quickly get to baseball and get your thoughts on this World Series and Mookie Betts coming up here as well, Chris. It is Gasper and Murray, Tim McCone in for Murray on this Saturday.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, back here, Gasper, Murray, Tim McCone in for Murray, and let's get right to your phone call, 617-779-0985. See you guys lined up, so let's go to Nick in Newton.
Hey, how you doing, guys? I just want to point out that after the Eagles Super Bowl, Brady went to Cousins and won it. So it wasn't Belichick trying to get Brady out of there.
So I'm not even a Felger guy. Generally, I work on the weekends, usually holidays. I'll take any and every call possible, as bad as your line was. But I couldn't understand.
I couldn't understand. Is that what I sounded like yesterday on Felger and Mass?
Something like that.
Because now I understand why I got so many tweets. Because honestly, I couldn't hear myself, so it sounded great.
Yeah, it sounded great. Yeah.
But if I sounded like that, now I get it.
That's understandable. All right.
Yeah, I get it now.
617-779-0985. Let's try Mike in the car. Mike, and I just dry hit the wrong button. Mike, call back and we'll get you on. 617-779-0985 is the telephone number. Quickly, Chris, before headlines, I just wanted to get your thoughts on this World Series.
Sure.
Mookie Betts and also Tampa Bay, because obviously that's where Chaim Bloom came from, the job that they've done so far. Just kind of what stands out to you so far in this series?
Well, I think I'll just start with a bigger sort of baseball point, which is the Rays here. If you look at what's going on, the like Raysification of baseball is here to stay, and it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And Andrew Friedman started it in Tampa Bay. He obviously is the general manager, president of baseball operations for the Dodgers. And the way the game is played now, you know, I know Felger and others will sometimes attack the, you know, the quote unquote the nerds. As a geek, I'm not going to attack the nerds. But what I will say is this: what I think analytically inclined baseball analysts have to understand is that, yes, the game is much more efficient than mm-hmm. it's been in the past, you know, from the efficiency standpoint and the way teams maximize talent and players. But that doesn't mean, McCone, that it's more entertainment. And it doesn't mean it's more entertaining. A more efficient version of baseball is not necessarily a more entertaining one, and I would argue it is a less entertaining one. I honestly cannot think of a World Series recently. The last World Series I cared this little about, and I'm rooting. I want the Dodgers to win. I want them to break their, you know, drought. I want Mookie to win. And I'm watching some of these games, but in terms of the last time I was really not invested in the World Series that much, I have to go back to 2003 and Marlins-Yankees, where it was basically after the Red Sox lost to the Yankees in the ALCS, I was just like, all right,
I just need to step away.
Yeah, I just need to not watch any baseball. Like, the season's over. I'm boycotting this. So I think baseball has an issue. I think baseball has a problem in that the best way to win does not create the most entertaining or really an entertaining product.
I think it's a great point. And I go back to this example from 2 years ago when Chris Sale was taken on the Rockies early in the season, right? Early regular season game at Fenway Park, Colorado Rockies in town. Who cares, right? He's got 17 strikeouts and he's going for the record and he gets pulled because of the pitch count. And obviously, right, this is the smart thing to do is to pull him. You're 100% right. But why else would I care as a fan about that Rockies-Red Sox game unless someone's going for history? And again, it's the smart thing to do, but I feel like in the early 90s or the mid-90s, you're going for that record if you have the opportunity to do it. And I just think it's moments like that that kind of make sports special. And if it's the smart thing to do to manage a guy, and I'm not saying you should have kept Chris Sale in there because obviously you couldn't have, but there's an issue with the sport if, you know, records like that are now unattainable simply because of pitch counts and things like that. And I think it's not necessarily analytics, but just kind of the way the game is played and managed now.
Well, you know, they always say, and it is true, it's a cliche, but it's true. Necessity is the mother of invention. And the Rays had to institute these innovations to be able to compete because they didn't have the resources. But the other thing about sports that's also true, this cliche, and we always say it's a copycat league. Well, it is. So now everybody's doing, you know, the opener stuff, and everybody's, oh, this guy can't go the third time through. And even last night, I'm not saying they made a mistake, but Walker Buehler was dealing, and he was out of the game after 93 pitches. I would have liked to have seen him go another inning. And I'm a big Walker Buehler fan. I like him. I've liked him for years. I think he has a little attitude to him. He has a little strut. I enjoy watching him. Blake Treinen, not so much. So, right, like, at that point, I'm kind of like, okay, you know, this game is not over, but I don't think the Rays are going to come back. And Buehler doesn't have the no-hitter, and he's out of the game. And I'm not going to see if he's able to pitch the seventh and maybe finish with 12 or 13 strikeouts. So I'm good. And I just think that when you combine, like, what I just said in terms of necessity being the mother of invention, I give the Rays credit. I think they've been the best-run organization in baseball for years based on the resources. But the copycat factor, like, this is how we're going to play now, it's just not as entertaining. And for me, McCone, the nadir of baseball entertainment and what frustrated me happened this postseason. And it was Padres-Cardinals. When the Padres had that game, I believe it was the clinching game of that series against the Cardinals, where they had a shutout and they used 9 different pitchers in 9 innings.
Yeah.
No thanks.
No.
I'm out.
No.
I'm out. And it was effective. You can't knock it in terms of efficiency and effectiveness. But again, you know, like I said in the beginning, the best way to win, the most efficient way to win, doesn't necessarily produce the most entertaining product. And I think baseball has to come to terms and come to grips with that.
No, I'm with you on that. In terms of watching Mookie Betts play, frustrating from a Red Sox standpoint to see him playing like this for LA.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, arguably the best player in the game is probably Mike Trout. But when it comes to number two, it's Mookie. And I think Mookie has made it a conversation with Trout, which that alone tells you how good he is. He's a, you know, here you had a homegrown generational talent face of baseball, and he's not with you anymore, and that's disappointing. But I can't put all the blame in that situation on the Red Sox, because I've been steadfast in saying that I thought, for a variety of factors, that, you know, Mookie Betts was not committed to wanting to finish his career here. And I know Felger mentioned some things this week. He has a source that says that the Red Sox actually met Mookie's number, and he said no thanks. And that would not surprise me at all if it were true.
Yeah, 617-779-0985. All right, I'm going to try not to blow it with these calls here and actually hit the right button. Let's talk to Morgan in Boston. Morgan, what's up? Morgan?
Morgan?
Yep.
Hey.
Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. What's up? What do you got?
I was just wondering, do New England fans resent Brady for leaving? And also, does Cam Newton's play have an impact on that?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't think McCone and I are equipped to speak for all New England fans, but I'll just speak as someone who's been a, you know, sports and analyst commentator here, you know, for a long time. I was surprised, McCone, at the degree of enmity towards Brady when he left. I thought people would be like, oh, it was a great run, you know, wish he would stay, but I understand, you know, this, all good things have to come to an end and stuff. Instead, I feel like there's people, like when he forgot the Downs, there's a lot of people actively rooting against and like bathing and basking in any sort of adversity or failure for Brady. And that's mind blowing to me.
It is surprising. I'm personally a Bucs fan now because I'm a Brady guy. I think he's the greatest quarterback of all time. And I'll never get over the fact that he was allowed to walk out the door with the Patriots, especially when you look at the options and the reasons. Again, Cam Newton wasn't in the plans. Jarrett Stidham clearly wasn't the next guy. So why they were willing to let him walk out the door, I'll never understand that. All because he wanted a massage and a good wide receiver.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy.
I will say, in defense of the Patriots, I think I can blame the Patriots for it getting to the point where Brady wanted to leave. But at the end, much like I feel like the situation with Mookie Betts, I think the player was driving the bus in terms of the departure. Like, I don't really know what the Patriots could have done this time. Well, I'll walk that back a little bit, because there was, I do know for a fact there was a time where Brady softened a little bit and was maybe willing to hear Bill out. And then they had a phone conversation where it was basically like, yeah, business as usual. So I'll walk that back a little bit. Never mind. Yeah, Bill's to blame. Never mind.
But it's that, but it's also the situation, like you said, the years leading up to it that kind of created that situation, which I think is preventable as well. Not all players are the same. Ultimately, when you have a quarterback that's won 6 rings, he is going to be a little different, and he's treated differently in the locker room by his peers as well. There's a difference there. So, I don't know. I'm bitter still. I'm bitter. 617-779-0985. I want to get back to this Antonio Brown stuff. Obviously, that's the biggest news in the NFL as well. We'll get back to your phone calls, and we'll talk some Patriots Niners coming up in the final hour of Gasper and Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. But first, Hub headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.